Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Welcome to the Oak Shape Podcast, Season 6, with your host, Dan the Fitness Man. Thank you for tuning in. We are excited to have you. This is the podcast that is dedicated to hard work, disciplined decisions, and year-round training in the pursuit of the best possible version of ourselves. We leverage elk hunting to create a pathway. We understand that time is finite and we cannot squander a second. We must be leaders at our home. We understand that faith is our number one priority, then family, then fitness, then health, then wealth. Our year-round disciplined decisions help us leave a legacy for our family to follow. You will leave here motivated, inspired, and educated. We bring on a wide variety of guests, subject matter experts, so that you can tune in, get what you need to get, and continue on your journey. We are blessed to call ourselves Elk Hunters, Season 6. Here we go. Guys, what's up? We're in Idaho, hanging out with the homie Clay Hayes, Season 8, a lone winner. That's what probably most people introduce you as. But I'm introduced you as a badass real bow hunter. So that's like self-bows, stick bows, like trad life, like real bow hunting, and a family man, and a guy who gets after it. So welcome to the podcast, man.
Appreciate it. Appreciate the opportunity.
Thanks for letting us invade your space. I like in-person podcasts way more. Dog, what's your dog's name?
That's Lily.
Lily? I grew up with boxers.
Yeah?
Yeah. They're good dogs.
Yeah, she's pretty smart.
How old is she?
I think she's 9.
She's getting up there.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're good rig.
Getting a little gray face.
Yeah. They're always excited. So, man, like, you won alone.
I did, yep.
So you should be retired, right? Like,
it's amazing how many comments I've got like that. Oh, man, you're set now.
I just want to know, how much did the government take out?
They take a third of it.
Yeah, so the government was stoked that you won.
Oh, yeah, yep.
So there's that, and then you clear that, or, you know, and then you're in a different category you probably weren't in. So there's just certain limitations, so... More money, more problems. But I really like your story. Like wildlife biologist by trade for Idaho Fish and Game, working on habitat. We'll get into that. Decided to take the leap and try doing like this digital era thing where like you do YouTube and quit your stability every 2 weeks, paycheck,
yep,
to go do what you really wanted to do. Man, are you crazy?
I am, quite possibly, yes.
Yeah.
It wasn't a hard decision for me, but it definitely, like when I went in to give my notice, my heart was pounding. I mean, it was in my throat, but it was like, man, once I did that and I walked out of that office after giving my 2 weeks note or yeah, after giving my notice, it was like, I was free. It's like, that is a feeling that is indescribable, really. Like, I can do whatever I want to.
You didn't grow up in Idaho.
No, I grew up in Northwest Florida. Grew up on a ranch. My dad's a cutting horse trainer. So I grew up riding horses, dealing with cows. We raised bison when I was a kid. My parents sold bison meat. So grew up on that stuff. And grew up at a time when Northwest Florida, at least our part, was a very rural area. It's been kind of co-opted into Pensacola now. It's a big, there's houses and people everywhere now. But when I was a kid, it was all pine forest, bobwhite quail, cottontails, and just big open country. And I had lots of land I could roam around on and spend time in the swamps and be a feral kid.
Feral kids where it's at. Absolutely. There's not enough of them anymore. It's a dying breed.
Yeah.
Which is scary.
Well, we give ours free reign, so they're pretty doggone feral. We have to make them take a shower. They come in the house and their feet are black and all. It's like, dude, you gotta get in the shower before you get in bed.
That's fair. How old were you when you finally came out and visited out west?
First time I ever went west was, I was probably 13, 14, something like that. And I can't remember if it was Pueblo, Colorado or Gillette, Wyoming, but we went out for the high school rodeo finals, the National High School Rodeo Finals. I made finals in the cutting, which if you're not familiar with cutting, you just have to Google it. It's a judged event. It's not like, you know, roping or riding bulls or anything, any of the other rodeo events that you'd normally be. Yep. Went out for the high school rodeo finals and fell in love with it. Knew that this is where I needed to be. And so, went to college for natural resources, wildlife sciences, ended up getting a master's from Mississippi State. And then once I graduated with that, we, Liz and I loaded up everything we owned, which all fit in the back of a half ton pickup. And we drove to Idaho.
Idaho, of all places.
Yep.
Did you have a job lined out, or you just drove to Idaho?
I first came out to Idaho for a temporary job, temporary technician. So we came out, had a six-month job, worked the summer, went back to Florida for that winter, and then came back out the next year, and then got hired on as a permanent technician, which then I got... took a promotion into a wildlife biologist, and that was in 2009 or 10. I can't remember. It must have been 10 because that's when we moved up here. We were in Southeast Idaho around Idaho Falls. But then moved up here near Lewiston, in 2010, I think.
You met Liz in college. You guys grow high school sweethearts. How'd you guys meet?
Yeah, we started dating in high school. So we've been together since we were 17.
Dang.
Yeah, she grew up, you know, I don't know, 10 miles down the road. Yep.
That's cool. You guys got two boys?
Yeah, Koi and Finn, 10 and 13. Finn is, he's running around here somewhere. I'm sure you get to see him. Koi's still sleeping, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Finn's the hunter. Koi doesn't really care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't really care to get out there. He likes to hike and backpack and stuff like that. Likes to fish, but doesn't really care about the hunting. Finn actually does, like, his, when I have him on a bow hunting video, like, they do way better than mine. We went down to South Florida this past year and got to hunt with my buddy Scott Crippen down there. And Finn ended up shooting two pigs with his little bow right there with the red and white fletchings on it, little sinew-backed Osage bow, and smacked two pigs with it. And he shot one right out from underneath me. I was sitting there waiting for this pig. Finn's sitting on the ground, and I'm standing up, and there's palm fronds everywhere. I'm waiting for this pig to clear a palm frond, and all of a sudden I hear, swack! he shot this pig before I ever got a shot. I was like, you little turd.
Love it. Good job, Finn. No, that's cool. It's a wildlife biology master's degree. We were kind of joking earlier, but like, there's a lot of newer hunters coming to the scene, adult onset, maybe from COVID, maybe it's just because we have a lot of human beings and urban sprawl. I don't care why, but your phone probably rang a lot with the same dumbasses asking the same dumbass questions. Where should I go hunting? You're the biologist, oh, yeah, right?
Dude. So at when I was working for Fish and Game, there's all of the biologists have to rotate through the front office. Like one day a month, you got to spend in the front office answering phones, answering people's questions and stuff like that. You know, in August, you start, if that's, you get your days in August, September, then you start getting those calls and you'll get 50 calls a day. And it's the same call 50 times a day. You know, sometimes you'll get a guy that calls and he's done his research. And he's saying, you know, I'm interested in going into this drainage or like, what's the elk population doing in this unit? He's got specific questions, you know, that guy you can help. Like, you can answer that guy's questions. Like, okay, you know, if he's asking about a specific drainage, if I've ever been in there, I'll say, yeah, you know, you can expect this type of stuff or whatever. Or you can answer questions about elk population trends and things like that. But the guy that calls and say, hey, I'm thinking about going to Idaho, just looking for a place to go. It's like, I can't help that guy because I get that call 50 times a day and I don't have 1,000 different places that I can send people. You know, I can make general recommendations like, okay, what type of hunt do you want to do? Like, are you wanting to do a 10-day backcountry backpacking trip? Are you looking to car camp? Are you like, what's your physical abilities? How much effort do you want to put into it? That type of stuff. And I can kind of give them some general ideas, but I can't tell them to go, you know, I can't give them a GPS location.
No, you cannot. Yeah, no, that's great. So guys listening, if that is you, biologist, and there's difference, like in Idaho, you guys had like habitat biologists like yourself, but then you had like populations biologists too, right? That do the aerial surveys, yep, and the studies and the objectives and calf counts and collaring animals. And, you know, there's some good questions to ask, like once you've done your prerequisite homework.
Yep.
And really start picking the brains of the biologists once you know kind of the lay of the land. Hey, is this road open? I was thinking about hitting this trailhead, and here was my strategy.
Yep.
It's going to bugle here, camp here. Have you seen any elk feed on this feature? What is, like, the fringe food? Like, get into the ask them the biology questions. I'm sure you guys have tons of information.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, you just got to do your research, and there's a lot of information in the elk management plans, too. I mean, all of the units are broken down in there. They all have cow-calf bull ratios, and then there's tons of harvest statistics on the internet. So there's lots of information out there to be had.
Yeah. Did you ever get involved in the surveying or the aerials or?
I did. I've done some aerial surveys. I didn't like doing it because it's incredibly dangerous. I mean, it's high risk flying because you're flying very, very low. Oftentimes you're flying, you know, in trees basically.
Yeah.
And it's the number one killer of wildlife biologists. So it's not something I wanted to be doing. But yeah. I mean, I did it when I was younger. It's fun. It's really fun to do. You know, when you're out on winter range and there's 3,000 elk in a herd and you're breaking them apart and counting groups of them and pushing, you know, it's fun, but it's also very dangerous.
Yeah, that makes sense. The Panhandle, Northern Idaho, doesn't have an objective for elk, which has always been kind of like, I've never understood why, other than that maybe it's just impossible for them to know their numbers because of the way that it's the land features, the topography, the timber. Did you ever hear the reasons why?
No, I don't have any idea. I worked in the Clearwater region, and it may have something to do with the how they do their surveys or how the topography and the cover affects their ability to do surveys. I don't really know. Like when I was doing the surveys, I was in Southern Idaho where their winter range is wide open. I mean, yeah, it's sagebrush and maybe
what
some juniper.
Specifically in Southeast Idaho were you?
I was the senior tech at Tex Creek Wildlife Management Area, which is a big winter range, a little southeast of Idaho Falls.
Yep.
And there was, at least when I was there, I don't know what the populations are now. But when I was there, they were gobs and gobs of elk. And I mean, it's a cool area.
Yeah. That area got hit pretty hard with snow this year, and south of there in Utah and Wyoming, that whole little like triangle in there. I'm wondering how those elk numbers are doing. I kind of pay attention to the snowpacks. We'll see. How long you been elk hunting, man?
First season was probably 2008 or nine. I can't remember exactly, but it took me a long time to kill an elk with a bow. I killed a few with my flintlock there those first couple of years, but I don't think I killed an elk for like with a bow for maybe six or seven seasons.
Yeah.
And I mean, I made some, like I had some great opportunities. Oh. Like if I knew what I know now and could go back then and have some of those same opportunities, I could have killed elk every year. But they were just, I mean, I grew up in the Southeast hunting whitetails, and our whitetails, I mean, I'm talking Florida whitetails. So like a mature doe might be 80 pounds, you know, mature buck. The first deer I ever shot was a 5.5-year-old 4x4s. We called him an 8-point down there. And he dressed out at 98 pounds. So I grew up hunting these things. I mean, they're like dogs. And then to come out west and to be close to an animal that's 500, 600, maybe 700 pounds, that's like a freaking horse, man. And they were just intimidating. And I was hunting them like whitetails, like being super, like, you know, if a whitetail might catch a glimpse of you and you might not spook it off, but if they are even the least bit curious about something about you, like they're never going to let you get drawn on them. You're never going to be able to draw on that deer. And I was the same. I was just too timid about them. I wasn't aggressive enough with the elk. I didn't know what I could get away with. And now I think I've pretty well got it figured out. Like, I mean, you can be pretty damn aggressive with elk. Like I walk through the woods just intentionally breaking stuff. And a lot of times you can walk right up on them.
Yeah. It's a huge, huge feature at the camps we do is like, you're not whitetail hunting.
No.
And it's a lot of these guys from the Midwest and the East are coming out west, and it's a different mindset. There is no sneaking, and if you're sneaking, you're a predator. If you're a predator, they're not going to have tolerance. But if you're loud and obnoxious, you're going to have a chance. And then the amount of crap you can get away with, especially if like a cow or an elk, or just any type of bull has maybe picked you off, and you just happen to vocalize a little with a cow call or something, while you're drawing your bow back and they watch you draw your bow back, it's incredible. You would never get away with that with a whitetail,
no,
right? I definitely think people err on the side of passivity versus being aggressive with elk. And that's why the learning curves are long. Mine was 5 minutes in Washington, killed with a rifle, wanted to get a bow.
Yeah.
Because they bugle, right? So got a bow in 2002. And I went to Idaho from 2002, and it wasn't until 2009 that I killed my first Idaho bull with a bow. Now, I had some success in New Mexico. I put an asterisk next to that because it's not North Idaho. It wasn't where at my home elk turf. I killed a couple bulls in Montana. But, man, I'm telling you right now, like 2002 to 2009, that's 7 years of pounding the brush, not killing a bull. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't because of opportunity. It's because I knew how to make every mistake.
Yep.
And I wouldn't trade. Honestly, I wouldn't trade those years for anything. It's made me the hunter I am today.
Yeah. 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 I put in a lot of miles, a lot of sore feet, and had some amazing experiences.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the best experiences I had elk hunting happened during that time. I never got to draw my bow, but one experience that I constantly remember is I had been elk hunting for maybe 3 years, and I was up on a ridge and had seen a cow or a bull and maybe five or six cows in this valley below me. It was late in the evening. So the next morning I got up on there, they were back in there. I just caught the tail end of the last cow going up into the timber.
Yep.
So I hustled down there, got on their trail and tracked them. They had gone through a creek and they'd splashed mud all over the thing. So I tracked them for like 4 hours until like, I don't know, 11 o'clock. And figured they were bedded somewhere. So I just kind of chilled, pulled out my lunch out of my pack and started eating lunch. And from not far, 70 yards away, maybe just over a knoll, I hear a bugle. I mean, they were right there. I didn't know it, but I crept up to this thing and I could see this bull. He was a nice bull, but he was running his cows around, you know, doing all of the herd behavior, stretching his neck out and checking cows and this and that. And I had a cow come up the ridge and come walking straight to me and dang near step on me. I mean, she stopped and was looking down at me, and I'm kind of like hunkered down with my bow, and she caught me off guard. She came over my right shoulder and I was like facing this way, so I couldn't turn to shoot. So I had to just sit there. And she eventually, she looked at me for, I don't know, 10, 15 seconds like that, and spooked and wheeled and ran off, but didn't bark. And when she did that, the bull come charging up the hill and he stopped just on the other side of a little fir tree that was 8 yards away, bugling. Mm-hmm. I mean, when a animal that big bugles that close to you, it's like it vibrates your chest.
Yep.
And that was like one of the first really close encounters I had with a big bull, and I'll remember that till the day I die.
You will. Yep. I got several of those types of stories, and it does something to you. Well, I'm obsessed with elk hunting. It's my North Star, man.
Yep.
I mean, I love hunting, but no, elk is what would keep our eyes on the prize.
I love it and I hate it.
It's tough and it's getting harder. We kind of talked about this off camera a little bit, but like, you know, we're going to get into the YouTube thing a little bit. I love YouTube. I hate YouTube, just like elk hunting. I love elk hunting. I hate elk hunting. But I like things that are hard. I'm drawn to things that are challenging. That's elk hunting for sure. There's a ton of physicality and more mentality, in my opinion, elk hunting. You just got to be kind of tough or really lucky. But if you're tough and a little lucky, man, sky's the limit. Now, same with YouTube. You've been doing YouTube for how long?
I think I put my first video up in 2008 or 9.
Yeah, somewhere right in there. You hadn't given notice yet? You hadn't given 2 weeks notice yet.
Oh, no. This, that was way before.
You got a real job.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I like making bows. I'm gonna put a video up of me making my bow.
Yep. Yeah, I started making YouTube videos just on bow making. Didn't have any inclination that you could make money doing it. I just enjoyed the creative process of it. And I like making bows and I like teaching people how to make bows. And so that was a perfect platform for doing that.
So fast forward, I think you said it best earlier, but like at some point it caught on. Like,
yeah,
people were noticing you're growing a platform, you're growing a community.
Yep. I started with the bow building video, started doing some bow hunting type stuff, did a film, like my first, what I call a film, premiered at the Backcountry Hunters and Anglers Rendezvous in Denver. That was in 2013. And that's when it really kind of started picking up a little bit. I started doing an educational series with BHA called Backcountry College, just random outdoor stuff, how to build a fire in the rain, how to tie knots, how to lift a bag, you know, for a bear hang, that type of stuff. And I started making a little bit of money at it. And then by the time 2017 came along, almost 10 years after I started, I got to the point where I was making a fair bit of money, but I was only spending maybe 5% of my time. The YouTube thing is what I really wanted to be doing. And so I knew that I could make it. Like if I invested all my time in it and really gave it a go, I knew that I could make it. But, you know, making that decision to do that, it made Liz super nervous because it meant like to take that leap meant that we had no insurance. We had no steady paycheck coming in. It gave up all of our security. Like we had nothing to fall back on really. And, but I knew that even if the YouTube thing didn't work out, like I could make a living doing something. I can build barns. I could do something to make, I'm like, we're not going to lose the house, you know? And so in the fall of 2017, I walked in to my supervisor's office, gave my 2 weeks notice, and then walked out. Like I said earlier, I walked out of that office and I was free. And it was, you know, my heart was in my throat when I went in there to give my notice, but it's like joy when you finally do it and you walk out and you're like, holy cow, man, I can do whatever I want. I am totally free.
Mm, that's powerful. And there's a lot of people that envy that, or at least look up to that, or would potentially even be willing to hear this and go for it themselves. So do you have words of advice? What have you learned along this journey? I don't think you went to business school.
No.
And there's some business involved, but I'm going to call you an influencer because that's kind of what you are. And I hate that word. Despise it. But what best practices, what have you learned, man, from the business side of things?
Well, when you go out on your own like this, like there's no, the biggest challenge is that there's no like pre-worn in career path. It's like, you don't know, like everybody that does this does it differently. And so you can't like look at this guy and say, okay, I'm going to do it this way. Or if I work like at this job, I'm going to get this promotion, then I can do this. And this leads to this. Like, no, there's none of that. There's none of that. And it's like, I've tried so many different things that just don't go anywhere. And I describe it as like, have you ever been in a deep cave where you can't see your face? Like there's some lava tubes in South Idaho where you can get back in there and there is no light. And it's like being in that. You have no concept of where to go. And you're like feeling your way around this dark cave, looking for an opening. And you might feel like a little recess and you might explore that. Sure. And it may go somewhere and it may not. But you got to check it out. And eventually, you know, you can kind of find a direction that works for you. And that's what I've done. Like I've tried all kinds of stuff that doesn't work. And you got to figure out what works for you and what you're comfortable doing, and what allows you to be genuine. But yeah, there's no like career path that goes along with this. But as far as like taking the leap and doing it, you're never going to be ready, I don't think, to do that. Like you're never going to be, at least I wasn't. I just knew that I could do it. And it really took some convincing for Liz, cause she was super nervous about it. But eventually, you know, she figured that it was actually working and got behind it 100%. And she does all the business stuff now. She does she takes care of all the stuff that I don't like doing.
Yeah, my wife does the same thing. She was a nurse for forever, and then honestly the main reason she stopped being a nurse was like I noticed like the day she'd go to the hospital, we have two little ones, a 6 and 8 year old, they're not little anymore, but man, like it kind of put a big dent in my ability to do Elk Shape all day, because it just, I gotta get them ready for school, I gotta take them to school, I gotta make their lunches. It doesn't sound hard, but, and then also just keep track of things. And then she didn't get home till late. A lot of nurses work 12 hour shifts. So I'm taking the kids, getting them home from school, making them dinner. Like, I'm just not doing Elk Shape basically. And it just came to a point where I was like, you hate going, like she worked on a shitty floor at the hospital. Mm-hmm. It was neuro. So it was like spinal surgeries or like major head trauma. And it's always men that get head trauma. And we as men turn into cavemen when we have major head trauma. Like, so just, I'm gonna leave it at that, but just horrible stories of just guys that I would like, literally, I would not allow them to do whatever they did. But, and you know, she loved her coworkers and stuff, but I was like, it came to a point, I was like, I don't like you working, you don't like working, and you could help me with the business stuff, which is code for, you can deal with all the business stuff, and I can just make content.
Yep.
And she's like, done. And she just told me the other day, she's like, hey, it's coming up on a year. Like, if I'm going to be a nurse, I got to keep my license. I got to like start working again. And I was like, well, do you want to do nursing? She's like, no. And I was like, sweet, done deal. Like, you're not a nurse anymore.
Knives, machetes, saws, and shears. Multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I'd let your license expire.
Same story with us. Liz was, she was in x-ray. And so she did that. And same exact story.
It's cool to work with your spouse or whatever. And honestly, my wife does not even hardly work with me. She's always doing what she wants to do. Mm-hmm. You know what she wants to do? Gardening.
Yep.
A home and garden TV projects on our house. Like, that's where all my money goes, man. To, like, I literally said this to Tyler, the camera guy over here, my buddy. I was like, Alicia will need the truck today because she will be going to the hardware store, because she goes to the hardware store every day. But she's happy, I'm happy, and that's cool that you guys are doing that. Let's talk about the catalyst. Because I don't want people to just give Alone all the credit for your success. Prior to Alone, when I met you, you weren't at 100K subs, but you were getting close. Because Joel, I met you, Joel and my buddy Cote, and they're like, oh man, you should check out his YouTube channel. He's got a YouTube. I did. And it was like, at the time, I was probably like at 20K subs. And I was like, oh shit, this guy's like getting inches away to 100. I've got to check this dude out. And I asked you when I got here, where are you at subs? And you're like, 320K. That's a huge, that's a game changer, mm-hmm. right? And not the monetary, like the monetization and ads. People think you make so much money off that, whatever, but it's really pennies on the dollar if you're going to run that program. It's the things that surround the platform, right?
Yeah.
Your cadence is one video a week?
Yeah.
That's so much work to me.
Yeah, but it's stuff that I like doing and that I would be doing anyway, you know? So it's not, you know, I have a pretty good job.
You self-film most of this?
Most of it, yeah. My oldest boy does some filming for me. I'm trying to get him interested in the cameras, and that would be cool. And then Finn, my youngest boy, he's riding his bicycle around here. He'll go like actually, you know, hunting and doing the stuff like that, but he doesn't do any of the camera work or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I'd say 95% of the filming that I do myself though.
You edit yourself.
Yep.
And you told me this funny story where I'm like, cause dude, you're hard to get a hold of, like cell phone service. I just turned my phone off. I can't get no service where you live. But like, I was telling Tyler, I was like, yeah, I got to coordinate when I talk to Clay. Like he's got to go to a special spot, stand on one leg to talk on a phone. So you don't have cell service. So I'm like, how the hell are you uploading videos? What were you doing living out in the boondocks uploading? I think that's hilarious.
Yeah. So, I think we've had like actual internet for maybe 2 years. So previous to that, we ran our whole business off our cell phones, but cell phone service sucks here. And so to upload a video, what I'd have to do is I'd have to take like 100 yards of extension cord and run it up the hill till I could see a cell tower, set up a tent.
I'm pretty sure it's more than 100 yards. that's a hill.
Put my laptop, couldn't, you know, connect the personal hotspot to my laptop in the tent and let it run overnight. It would still take, you know, 18 hours to upload a video.
Oh my God. How happy were you when you finally got internet?
It's pretty cool to be able to sit in the bedroom and like have internet and upload a video without having to freaking go set up a tent and a hot spot up on the hill.
That's commitment right there. What about filming cameras and stuff? Like, do you know stuff about cameras or are you pretty raw? Have you learned over the years?
I know enough to do what I do. I filmed with Canon DSLR for a long time, and just this last year just switched to the Sonys.
You did?
Yeah.
You had to switch.
Oh man, it's and they're nice. Like everything about I like everything about them.
What Sonys did you end up rolling with?
The A7S maybe?
Yep.
Is that it? Is that right? Yeah.
I remember switching from Canon to Sony quite a few years ago, and there was a learning curve, man, for sure. But now you hand me a Canon DSLR, foreign language.
Yep.
I don't even know how to use, Sony's are rad. except for the overheat. Yeah, so speaking of, like, I was kind of asking you if you knew much about filming, but I'll be honest with you, as a fan of the show alone, before you were ever on there, I've always loved that show. It's something my wife and I always watch, and it's just unique. It's self-filmed by the contestants. Mm-hmm. And I did watch your season, and you got a lot of airtime. And I remember telling my wife, I'm like, Clay's YouTube days have really catapulted him. He is on the show more than the other contestants because he's doing a freaking awesome, rad job at filming his experience. Yeah. That's what stood out to me.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, like, you know, you can watch the show, and some people just don't have much airtime, even though they were doing stuff, because they just, like, the filming just didn't jive with them. You know, and some people enjoy the process. Some people, it's just a burden on them. For me, I like filming. To get a good shot on film, to me, is, like, I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. I think the filming prior to being on the show really helped me anyway.
Yeah, you killed it. So you won season 8. Mm-hmm. You were in the bush for 74 days, plus all the nonsense leading up to it, the training, the lockdown. It was during COVID.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll have to give more context to the show for those that don't know, but I don't feel like it's a spoiler alert now, because they're on what season?
This will be 10 coming up,
yeah,
maybe?
Yeah, 10's coming up. So
I don't remember.
Can you describe the feeling when they surprised you with your wife, assuming that's real?
So that's the only thing, like, every other season, the spouse has got to come out there. We did ours right in the middle of COVID. They wouldn't let her come. They wouldn't let Liz come up there.
Man.
And so they told me themselves. I don't know, man. You can look at you can watch those final scenes in that season and see the emotion that's coming, you know, across. I'm not usually a very emotional person, but that was very emotional for me. If you watch closely, if you watch my facial expression, when they first kind of broke the news, I was like, I didn't really understand what they were saying, because for so long, like if you allow yourself to start hoping that the next time you see them, you're going to go home with them, like it's going to be over. If they come out and it's not over, that can be crushing. And so I was guarding myself against that, because they come out for med checks periodically, if you're not familiar with the show.
Like how often?
It depends on, for us anyway, it depended on the time of season, the duration, or the time during the time that we were out there. That doesn't really make sense, but when we were there early, the intervals were fairly long.
Yeah, like, so you, like, they drop you off, like, I'm gonna just guess, but it looks like end of September, October-ish.
Yeah, so they dropped us off September 18th, and I think the longest I ever went without seeing anybody, if I remember correctly, it was about 3 weeks. But as the season,
it's pretty long.
As the season goes farther, they start coming more often, because people's body condition starts to deteriorate, and so the doctor just has to keep closer tabs on you. And so towards the end of it, they were coming every 7 days or so. And so there at the end, it's getting on up there, you know, it's getting 65, 70 days. And they say, okay, we're coming for a med check. And it's during those times when they're going to tell you that you're the last one. So you say, oh man, like, this is it. Like, they're coming to tell me I won. And if they come and do the med check, all that stuff, and then they leave, it's like, can you imagine, you know, the that would be crushing for you.
No, I couldn't imagine. So, it's tough, man.
And so I guarded myself against that. Like, I totally took that whole scenario out of my mind. Like, this is not possible that they're coming to tell me that I am the last one. And so that was not a part of my, like, being. And so when they told me that, when they broke the news, it was like, I was like legitimately confused as to what they were trying to tell me. And it wasn't until they said, you're the last one, that it sunk in. I was like, holy holy crap, I did it. Like, I'm going home. And that was my first thought. It wasn't about the money.
No, it was definitely,
it was like, I'm going home. Yeah, I'm going home to see my family.
Yeah. Incredible. So you just kind of answered a question that I was totally convinced otherwise. But I guess I'm gonna just break it down for you. What cameras are on your persons as a contestant?
So they give you a Canon
camcorder.
Yeah, it's okay. One of the bigger, like a prosumer type camcorders. So you got that. You got a small little JVC. You got maybe two or three GoPros. And a bunch of batteries.
Yeah, like a shitload of batteries, right?
Ton of batteries. Because they, and media cards. Like, I mean, yeah, they give you
limitless, right? Because really, yeah. I was convinced, Tyler, I might have told you this, but I was convinced from an editorial standpoint, you can't get all this footage after 74 days from how many contestants?
10.
10 contestants. There's not enough time to sort through all this. So I figured they had to be doing not only med checks, but camera, like, here's your camera, here's your car, here's your fresh batteries. Oh, and what timestamps or like what highlights did you film so that we can start editing? Is that true or not?
Absolutely. You're spot on. So when they come out to do the med checks, they give you fresh batteries and they give you fresh media cards and they take all of your dead batteries and media cards. And, you know, presumably behind the scenes, they have someone that's dedicated to each participant that goes through all their footage.
Wow.
And I said at one point, I was like, man, whoever has to watch all this crap, I'm going to have to buy you a beer. Cause they're literally, I probably gave them 800 hours of footage.
Yep.
I mean, cause there's a lot of time they drill into your head before you go out there. It's like, you just film everything. Just keep the camera rolling, which is great advice. Because for those of you who've seen the season, like they said it was day number one, but it was actually day two or three. I'm just sitting around a campfire and a mountain lion comes up behind me. It's like 10 yards. And I was sitting by my campfire, not doing anything. Like I was just sitting there and the camera was rolling. And if the camera wasn't rolling, I never would have got that moment on film.
That was incredible. And
it was one of the most awesome moments of my time there, probably of the entire
run of the show.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Like, yeah, so let's talk about the hunting regulations. Like, you were in BC.
Yeah.
BC loves their bears, their grizzly bears. They're protected in Alberta. And my last podcast was literally about how grumpy I am about that. But, like, there's some years, seasons where it seems like it's like free reign, kill whatever you want that you need. What was there limitations on yours?
Yeah. So, you know, they have the regulations and you got to follow that stuff. So we had, on our season, so at my side, I had moose and had, grizzlies and then, you know, of course, mountain lions and black-tailed deer. The only thing, so moose were off limits. Of course, grizzlies were off limits. The only big game that we could hunt were deer. And of course, and they would allow us to hunt cats, which was, you know, for somebody to kill a cat with a bow would be very unlikely. So I was, when they told us, congratulations, you can hunt cats, I was like, well, okay, great, thanks. I never thought I'd see one, but I, you know,
Golly.
Of course, day two or three, I had that opportunity, thought about it later. I ended up trying, my bow was back at my tent, like 20 yards away. So I tried to slip back and grab my bow.
Yeah.
And what I should have done was just rush to that cat.
Try to tree it, right?
Yep. I should have rushed it when it was so close and then ran and got my bow. But, you know, that didn't cross my mind during that time.
Yeah, that's a bummer, man. I'd really like to have, like, to me, you did kill a deer.
Yep.
How many? Just one?
Yeah, just got one deer. That's all you're allowed.
Oh God. Did not know that. Okay. So you got one deer now. So that's not going to sustain you. So how did you butcher it? How did you like space out the meat? How did you procure the meat? Like, what'd you do, man?
Yeah. So when I killed that deer, it was, I don't remember what day it was, but it was warm. I mean, it probably had gotten up to 80 degrees that day. And so, you know, you're in an area that has an incredibly high grizzly density. It's warm. There's flies. And so I quartered it up, put all the meat in like all the odds and ends, backstraps, liver, all that stuff in the hide and bundled it up. Didn't have a pack or anything. Right. So you're carrying all that stuff. I think I had about a 2 mile hike back to camp. And so I took all the meat and like leapfrogged it and just kind of leapfrogged it in stages all the way back to my camp, hung it up for that night. And then I think I hung it for like 3 days because I needed to build a smokehouse to cure the meat out. So I spent like 3 days building a smokehouse and then cut all the meat into little strips, little jerky strips basically. And I smoked that entire deer. I kept the shanks whole and smoked them whole. And one of those shanks I kept all the way until Thanksgiving Day. And I cooked that shank on Thanksgiving Day. No salt, no preservatives, no nothing. Just smoked over an alder fire for 3 days. It was freaking awesome.
That's badass, man. No, you really like proved your mettle. Like, did you impress yourself at all along the way? Did you know your ability? Did you feel like you like kind of? What was your mindset?
Just day by day. I mean, I don't know. I tried to avoid anyway trying to, like, I never thought about how much is, I didn't even keep track of the time. I didn't know how many days I was there. I didn't care. I before I ever went in there, I made the commitment that I was not coming out voluntarily. So the only two ways for me to come out of there was to either be the last one or for them to pull me out medically. I was in the headspace to, I was in the right frame of mind to do that and to push your body to that limit, you know, and they let you get pretty run down before they'll pull you out medically. Hmm. I mean, there's been seasons in the past where guys have gotten very, very, very skinny.
How was the recovery process and transitioning back to real life after the season?
It was interesting coming out of the woods because you don't have any, you'd have no, they don't give you any information. They don't tell you what day it is. They don't tell you what's going on in the world. You don't have any idea what's going on with your family when you're out there. And so all of this was like COVID blew up while I was out there. I had no idea what was going on in the world. And so coming out, you know, you're getting all of this information. And it was interesting getting it from the Canadian perspective, you know? But they, as far as like nutrition and stuff like that, they have your meals like catered to you, whatever your needs are. So they have a nutritionist there planning out all your meals and stuff like that. And so they keep you, it's not like they bring you out of the woods and then like kick you loose. You know, we had to stay, I stayed at the lodge where they were doing all the production stuff for probably 10 more days. After I came out
and
of the woods.
And probably some post-production filming and yeah. All that jazz.
Yeah, they did some interviews and all that stuff. And then at the end of that, put me on an airplane back home.
It's time to interrupt this podcast and pay some bills. Give some shout-outs to my partners. These are the cornerstone to the Elk Shape brand. Shout-out to Matthews Incorporated, shooting the Phase 4 29, 33 in 2023. Really excited about the split limbs. We're talking the quietest, most vibration-free bow on planet Earth. Shoot it at a local dealer near you. Vortex Optics, running the UHDs, running the Viper 3000 for rangefinder. If you are in the market, eurooptic.com. Discount code ELK10 takes 10% off. If you want some of that Vortex wear, including that Sunslayer hoodie, discount code ELKSHAPE takes 20% off. OnX Hunt Elite membership, discount code ELKSHAPE, 20% off. Access to all 50 states. Complimentary membership to Top Rut, the most precise draw odds out on the market. You also get Hunt Reminder, never miss a draw deadline. And it's the most robust platform proven in the backcountry for accuracy. Numa Outdoors, that is the hunting clothing I wear in the backcountry. Discount code ELKSHAPE20. will take 20% off. Cufaro coming out with the new backpacks in 2023, the new Bino harness. Check it out at cufaro.net. Their website has been updated. Best backpacks, best frames on planet Earth. MagView, discount code Elkshape, 10% off. Digiscoping made easy, made in America, lifetime warranty. Wilderness Athlete, new discount code, 20% off, Elkshape 2023. Enter that. Check out the Elkshape packages. Links are in the show notes. You can see the Elkshape stack that I take year round, as well as my September stack, and including the Mrs. Elkshape stack. Buck Knives, made in the USA. They're my neighbor, 20 minutes down the road since 1902. Two different style of knives for the backcountry this year. Check out the Pack Light series. There's four different offerings there if you want to save weight, or check out the new Alpha Scout or the Alpha Hunter. Both will be in my kill kit in 2023. Crispy Hunting, Brickstall's Mountain GTX. That is my new favorite boot. Been testing it for the last 6 weeks, putting it through its paces. This is an awesome boot. It's got a flex rating of 3, and it's very universal, well-rounded, all mountain, all types of hunting. Check it out. You can order online, and if it's not the right fit, you can send it back for the right size. Crispy is made in Italy. Stealth Cam, non-cellular and cell. They have a new cellular coming out. Actually, I have my hands on it. It's got on-demand, so if you want to get a picture anytime you want, you can press a button. They also have the regular 4Ks, which I'm a huge fan of, leaving trail cameras out year-round, especially on elk wallows. Discount code ELKSHAPE20 will take 20% off on non-cell, and ELKSHAPE10 will take 10% off cellular. Marsupial, get the enclosed bino harness with magnets. Never have brush debris in your bino harness. And check out the new hip quiver as well. That's just out, as well as their bow case, rifle case. I rock them all. Baku e-bikes, discount code ELKSHAPE, $300 off. If you're in the market, use where legal. They are stealth mode. And always, Black Ovis, 10% off any purchase. Discount code ELKSHAPE plus free shipping, and it's fast. Last but not least, we have Sheep Feet, Fatty, Alien Gear, Crossover Symmetry, Canvas Cutter. Discount codes in the show notes. Back to the podcast.
Being in the woods for 74 days and then having a kind of a short transition to being, then finding yourself in an international airport was pretty crazy, because you know how crazy airports are. And you know, I'd been in the woods and I had no schedule. Didn't rush to do anything. You know, it's a very simple, very laid back type of a, you know, lifestyle. And then to be in an international airport like that, where there's just chaos, people running around everywhere, that was a very, very strange juxtaposition. But as far as like coming home, some people, I hear some people have difficulty with that. For me, it was not, it was just like coming home from a long hunting trip. You know, I jumped right back into everything with a greater appreciation for family and everything else that you can tend to take for granted for certain. Because being out there, that's one of the great benefits of being out there, is it takes away from you everything that you do take for granted. And it gives you a much greater appreciation for that type of stuff. No, it wasn't, there was no problems like transitioning back into my everyday life here. Cause I'm used to that. I'm used to going away for, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks on a hunting trip and then coming back and, you know, just picking up everything.
Yeah. I know that life. I live that life too. And what you said there about, you realize the things you take for granted. I mean, hunting does that for me, but I think obviously to what you did to a higher degree, because that's a long time by yourself and you are trying to survive straight up. Any motivation to win the money, or was it always just about the experience?
I never thought about the money at all. And I've said it before, I would have done it had there not been any money. I would have done it just for the challenge of seeing if I could do it, because it's something that it's like the ultimate challenge. You know, for skills that I've tried to develop my whole life. You know, we were talking earlier, I've been in the woods doing this stuff since I was, you know, 8-10 years old. And so it's like, now you have this opportunity to actually put all those things to the test and figure out if you're as good as you think you are.
Mm-hmm. So now let's fast forward, man. Like, here we are, present day. Take us through like a average day for you. Like, how do you, what's work, quote unquote, what's not work? What are you looking forward to? What's your primary objectives? Raising family? Like, Just take us through it.
Okay. So, it's hard to describe an average day because there aren't really any average days because I might be on any given day, we might be in the backcountry backpacking, hunting, or just on a backpacking trip, making content. I might be here in the shop making a bow. I might be back in the woods doing some bushcrafting video or teaching people how to tie knots or something like that. And so that's my work. I go and make videos about whatever I happen to be interested in that day. And then I come back and edit it, and then upload that to YouTube. Liz does all the hard stuff. I mean, she keeps track of all the money, keeps track of the bills. She we have a Patreon site where people can sign up for a couple bucks and get like content that other people don't get. She keeps track of all of that stuff, fills all the orders, basically all the like stuff that makes the business run. I just do, I make videos.
You're the star, man. Yeah. So Patreon, I've heard a lot of people doing that. That's essentially a paywall to get more exclusivity on some of the content.
Yep. Basically. So the stuff that's on Patreon is like very in-depth, detailed bow building. Like I explain every little detail, every problem that you could run into when you're building a bow, and there's a lot of them. And so that's the primary reason folks sign up for that, for my Patreon anyway, if they're super into bow building.
That's really cool. And then obviously YouTube, monetizing YouTube, I mean, that does help, right? Like it's kind of a nice stream of income.
Yep.
But it certainly would never pay all your bills. Like you've got to do other things.
It can. It certainly can. If you've got the subscriber base, there's people that make a lot of money on YouTube. I'm not to that level yet.
Yeah. I mean, it's just not an audience for a guy who's kind of like you. Maybe there will be, and I hope, I certainly pray. I mean, I would love that. But, we don't make stuff for kids, so we don't have Mr. Beast, 30 million views in a day type thing. Logan Paul, very controversial, doing stupid stuff. Like, that's not, like, you're adding a lot of value and education as your content cornerstone. So there's other things besides Patreon and YouTube. You work probably with some companies, I would assume. Yep. What are some of the favorite companies you work with?
So Kifaru, First Light, Vortex, those guys, Seek Outside, those guys have been with me for a long time, since I think 2000. I did a film in 2015 where we did a backcountry mule deer hunt. And that was the first time that I ever really got sponsors. Three Rivers Archery's in there. I think that's all of them. So I'm probably leaving somebody.
Yeah, I get it.
Those guys, it's an endorsement type deal. But the thing, like especially, and First Light's a perfect example. Like First Light just came on as a sponsor this last year, but I've been wearing First Light stuff for 10 years.
Yeah.
And so it's like I'm sure you get it too. I get daily, I get a dozen people a day wanting me to pitch some product. And I just got one the other day, $4,000 or $5,000 to pitch some. It was like a survival food company that was wanting to pay me to integrate a 30-second ad into a video, $5,000. I'm not going to do that because it doesn't fit with my videos. I don't know what these, it may be crap. Like, I have no idea what this product is.
Somebody's saying yes, because I am getting the similar amount of like emails asking for similar type things that are not vetted. And a lot of times, honestly, they don't have no relevancy to the kind of content I'm making.
I've gotten them for mattresses, like all kinds of stuff. And so
somebody's saying yes, cause they're like,
oh yeah,
turning and burning.
And that's, I'm not saying that I would never do that. Like if I had a product that I was familiar with, that I liked, or that I had some use for, maybe I'll do it someday. I've never found the situation where I'd feel comfortable doing that. And so I'm turning down thousands of dollars a month because I don't want to do that. But you still get people, like anytime you mention a company or whatever, or they see a sponsor logo on a video, you're like, oh, you're sellout. And it's like, dude, if you had any idea what kind of money I turn down because I don't want to pitch products that I don't believe in or that I don't use or has no relevancy to this video, you would probably reconsider what you're saying. So I don't know. The companies I work with are good companies. They're stuff that I've been using for years. They're well made.
Don't sell me. In fact, try to sell me on not doing the kind of work you do for a living. Like, what's all the stuff that maybe makes you pause and question what the hell are you even doing? Besides comments like that, obviously.
The comments section on YouTube is like a free for all. You know, anybody can post anything up there. And it's like that across social media. Most of my comments are really good. Every now and then you get somebody that's just like venting or being unreasonable or whatever. I just ignore those. But as far as like, you know, you could take those things to heart, I guess, and like allow people to like run you down. I just choose to ignore them. And, I picture them as just some sad person that needs this outlet in some way. But no, most of my comments are good. As far as like why not to do this, it is a hustle. I mean, you got to stay on top of it. It's not like if you can't slack off and still get a paycheck. You know, I have to continuously put out content, which is fine for me because I do the things that I want to do anyway. I'm just documenting my life and putting it on YouTube, you know? I honestly can't think of one reason why you would not want to do that. Unless you're just, you like the idea of just being able to go to work, do your thing, and then leave it. Like, I'm never not working. I'm always working, but my work is my life. If that makes sense.
It makes sense to me, obviously, because I'm in similar shoes as you. What's your wife's perspective on you always working? How do you balance that?
So that's changed dramatically. So when I was working for Fish and Game and doing the YouTube thing, especially in those last couple of years, right up until I left Fish and Game, it was pretty hard on us because I would go to work, you know, for 8-10 hours a day. And then I would come home and I would be on the computer for another 3-4 hours. And I wasn't interacting. You know, Coy, my oldest boy, was a toddler at that time, or, you know, once it got on up till I quit, he was a little bit older, but like, it was very difficult on the marriage because I was not very good at managing my time. I had an idea in my head, what I was trying to build, and she couldn't see what I saw. But after I left Fish and Game, it got a lot better. I mean, it was like night and day, because then I had all the time, you know, we were doing things together. And that's one of the good things about what I do, is because we can do, like, if we go on a hunting trip, like one of the things we do every year is we do our bow hunting elk camp, is we take the whole family. We go set up a big wall tent. We just live at elk camp until I kill something. And that might be the whole month. And we just live in the mountains and we do that together. So it's been very good since I quit, but before I quit, it was tough there for a couple of years.
I think you answered that really well. Yeah. So Clay, super pumped for you, man. Like, you're a hardworking guy, but you're really modest. Like, I'm just gonna give you some observations, first impressions. Like, you've set it up to be simple, and you and I both know, be a simple man. Like, that's definitely the way to live. You're a passionate bow builder. Like, legitimate next level bow building guru. Like, this, you're the guy. And it's incredible. This shop, what you do. Wow. So the Patreon might just be worth its while for those that are maybe having some interest. But start at the beginning. Go check out his YouTube channel. Any particular videos that are some of your favorites?
Well, it depends on, the category, I guess. There's bow building stuff and there's bushcraft stuff. But my favorite videos are out either hiking or hunting with the kids, the family type stuff. One of my favorite videos has nothing to do with hunting or bow building or anything. It was my oldest boy and I did a backpacking trip into one of the wilderness areas here in Idaho. And Koi struggles with letting big picture overwhelm him. Like if he wants to accomplish something, it's easy for him to get overwhelmed. And on that trip, like it was a hard trip. You know, it was his first big backpacking trip. We backpacked into an alpine lake, did some fishing and that type of thing. And on our way back out of there, we came up and we were sitting on this bluff and we were looking back across this, misty valleys and ridges that we had climbed over. And I pointed and I said, that way over there, that's where we just came from. And I looked and I asked him, he's probably 10 at the time. I asked him, before you did that, would you have thought that you could have done that? And he said, no. And I looked back at him and I asked, how did you do that? And he put his head down between his knees and he thought for a minute and he looked back up and he said, one step at a time.
That's.
And I'm tearing up thinking about that moment.
That's powerful.
So that's, that's one of my favorite videos. And another one is just like, Finn, my youngest one. He ended up killing a pig with a self bow when he was seven years old, spot and stalk on his own. Like I wasn't even there. We were down in South Florida again. We were hunting with, Ryan Gill, who's a big primitive guy down there. And I'd killed a pig the day before, so I didn't even have my bow. It was me, Ryan, Finn, and then Vaston Hall, whose land we were hunting on down there. We got into this group of pigs. I'm filming Ryan. So I turned my attention to getting the shots on him. Finn runs up to me. I had one arrow for him, had a broadhead on it. I didn't want him walking around with behind us with a broadhead.
Hell no.
So I hand him his arrow. He runs off. And I turn back my attention to Ryan. Like 5 minutes later, he comes running up to me and says, I shot one. I kind of looked at him and was like, oh, okay. Like I didn't know what to make of it.
Yep.
But I asked Vaston, who saw it happen. I was like, did he really shoot one? He said, yeah, I watched it run off with the arrow. And so we got on this blood trail, tracked it for a little ways, and he'd killed like, it was a big, it wasn't a huge pig, but it was probably 70 or 80 pounds with a 20-pound self bow, had one arrow. I was like, that's pretty freaking
dude,
awesome.
That's pretty legendary awesome. Status.
I know.
Look out, world. Finn's coming. Wow. That was Finn?
Yep.
Wow. Yeah, we just met him. So he's 10 now?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's the hunter. Isn't it funny how it's kind of, I always thought my son would be a hunter. I don't know if he's going to be, honestly. I thought my daughter would love hunting, maybe, or what? No, she just wants to spend time with me on anything. But at age four, how old are you?
42.
So I'm turning 42 this year. Yeah, I want my kid to hunt, but I actually don't really care if he doesn't ever want to be a hunter. Then I'm okay with that. And if you would have asked me that 10 years ago, I'd be like, yeah, my kid's gonna hunt. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. But really, you don't decide those things.
Yeah.
You show them as much cool stuff as you can. And I tip my hat to you, man. Like, kind of jealous that your kids get to spend a month at elk camp, living out of the woods, hearing your stories every day and helping mom out. And I mean, they're just gathering so much confidence that's vetted to do anything they want. I mean, that's cool.
Yeah, and Finn will go, he'll actually go hunting with me, some. Koi likes to hike, and there's a lot of geological activity where we're at. So they're always like picking up different rocks, looking for fossils, geodes, and things like that. Play in the creek. You know, they like to build boats and float them down the creek and stuff like that. But you know, it's good. It's really nice to have the whole family there. And you know how much of a grind elk season is. It's like the days are long, and you get back to camp, and I gotta admit, it's so nice to have Liz there to have dinner ready when I get back, because I can eat and then go to bed, get back up the next morning and do it again.
That's an advantage.
Oh my God, it is.
That's a nutritional recovery advantage.
It is, because when you know we did elk camp, just the guys there for a long time, and you'd get back, you know, you get out of the woods back to camp, and it might be 9:30, maybe 10 o'clock. Then you got to cook dinner, eat. You know, you're in bed by maybe 10:30, 11, and then you're getting up at 4 a.m. and you're doing that day after day. And I couldn't, like, I still, even with Liz cooking, I can't keep the weight on.
No.
And I'm not, you know, right now I'm 160 pounds. I'll lose 7-8 pounds at elk camp, you know, over the duration of the time I'm there. But it's tough.
But it's the best. It's my favorite thing. And I'm excited that you're excited about taking your family on the journey. Clay Hayes, website is clayhayes.com.
I wish somebody has clayhayes.com.
Whoever you are, let's buy that domain back from them.
They won't sell it to me. Okay. It's Twisted Stave, STAVE.com. If you just Google my name, it'll come up.
Yep.
And then so with all the other stuff, YouTube, Instagram, Clay Hayes Hunter.
I've been sucking at Instagram lately. I need to start posting more.
I go through spells.
Do you?
I'll post a bunch, and then I'll go a week without posting anything.
I like the weeks worth out posting anything.
Yeah.
How about direct messages on Instagram? So I've always answered them all, and I can't keep up at this point right now. Are you what's your status on that?
I'll go through, there's a lot of times I don't even look at direct messages, because if I get a bunch of them, and so I don't know, if I don't respond to a message, don't think that it's because I don't like you or because I don't think what you have to say is important, but I just get a lot of messages and I can't respond to all of them. I'd spend all my time responding to messages.
Yeah. It's a time suck is what it is. Yeah. It's worthwhile to a degree, but it's not. I ain't got no time for that. Yeah. I need to work on comedy on YouTube a little bit more. I am very good at posting and ghosting there. Because I'm usually working on the next project after I've uploaded and scheduled it. Clay, I'm already on to the next thing, and I'm not even thinking about that. We filmed that video 4 weeks ago, you know?
I don't know if it does. I don't know if it actually helps the algorithm or whatever. I have no idea how YouTube works. Because some videos you think are going to do really well do just kind of okay, and then some that you're saying they do they blow up. So it's I don't know. Yeah. I think it just has to do with the thumbnail. You just got to make an awesome thumbnail.
That's it. Okay, well, we're gonna work on. No, there's videos that I've edited, poured my soul into, and really got the greatest shots and told a good story, and just spent way too much time on it. Doesn't do well.
Yeah.
And then there's videos that I literally film because something happened that day, and I just do a real quick half-assed job, throw it up there, and it crushes, and then that's when I lose my mind. I'm like, I can't figure this out.
Yeah, because as creators, I appreciate high production value. I appreciate beautiful shots. YouTube doesn't give a damn about that stuff.
Hey, man. No, do you mess with YouTube Shorts at all?
I've done a few, but not... I haven't put much time into it at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Same. I don't know. I'm going to keep, my focus is the podcast, because I got to know you today and I didn't have to look at my phone or nothing. I just one-on-one with Clay Hayes. That was cool. That's a memory, life short. So that's why I'm keeping the podcast, not for any other reason than that. Instagram, because I know how to do it pretty decent. And I just like the following there and the vibe. YouTube, because I like long form media. I like making stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to have a TikTok for now. Never, not going to probably do a TikTok, whatever. Not going to ever buy airtime TV show. What other people are doing? Like, those are my three focuses, and kind of put a little gas on each fire and figure out how to get a real job.
Yeah. It's to extend myself any farther than I have already would be, I think the content would suffer. Like the quality of the YouTube stuff would suffer. I do actually have a TikTok, but I haven't put anything on there forever. I started TikTok after talking with Donnie Dust on a TV show that he was working on. I was working as a consultant on that. And Donnie, do you know who Donnie Dust is?
No.
So he was on season 6 of Alone, but he's freaking crushing TikTok. He's got this thing where like people ask him, "Can you make a whatever? Can you make something?" He's like, "Yeah," and he just like whacks this katana sword out of a stone. You know, he makes cool videos, but he was doing super good on it. He's got millions of followers on that thing.
Yeah, no, TikTok's an easier platform to gain traction for sure. You look at the back end of it, it's a little sketchy for me. But anyways, there's another season of Alone. It might have been the year before you. The dude built the rock house.
Yeah, it's Roland.
Yeah, that guy was a beast on that season, like killing the muskox, mm-hmm. kind of. By his hands, technically. And the fact that he still ran out of food. I mean, you killed a freaking muskox and you're fishing. Where was his season filmed at?
They were in the Northwest Territories.
Yeah.
I think Great Slave Lake.
Have you guys connected at all?
Uh-uh.
No.
Roland, I don't know much about Roland. He's just kind of off doing his own thing.
Yeah.
Jordan Jonas, I've hung out with him quite a bit. He's a good dude. And know him fairly well. He was 6. He won season 6. He ended up killing a moose.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. No, no, your season was wild. You guys got to go check it out. I binge them. I don't have TV, so like I have Netflix. So when they come on Netflix,
just like pounding it.
You pretty much can count me out for the next. I'm going to like not sleep that much week because my wife will be like, "Ha, one more episode. Yeah, one more and then we'll go to bed." And you killed it, dude. So I look forward to watching your stuff. You're going bear hunting here. So am I. So good luck. Hope you stroke a big one. If not, you're taking your kids, so it'll still be worthwhile. Thanks for letting us invade your space.
Absolutely.
I really enjoyed it.
Had a good time.
Guys, Clay Hayes, check him out. I got all the links in the video description. Hope you like the YouTube component of this as well. Remember, separation is in the preparation. We'll catch you on the next one. Want to thank you guys for tuning into this podcast. Clay Hayes is a stud. I think it's pretty obvious if you listen to this one, man. He's the real deal. He's a real one. And Clay, if you're listening, thank you for hosting us and showing us your world. I like his lifestyle, guys. He's a super simple guy, but he's got a narrow focus. He's very hardworking and he's self-made, and I just respect the heck out of him. Check out some of his content. The links are in the video description, like I mentioned previously. And we appreciate your support. I know there's a lot of options out there on podcasts. It's growing. And so if you've been with us in day one or is this your first one ever, hey, I'm selling you hard work and I'm trying to bring on guests or topics that make you think and make you want to work hard towards your goals and create a lifestyle for yourself that you're proud of and that brings you joy. Guys, separation is in the preparation. Elk season's just around the corner. Every day is an opportunity to inch your way closer to being fully ready to be limitless in the mountains and to be prepared with a plan of attack so that you can eat elk meat 365. Thanks for tuning into this podcast. We'll catch you on the next one.